Okay, Roger. So tell us about the early conferences that and their relationship to the community's evolution.
Well, when I arrived here in 1974, November in 74, almost 50 years ago, first of all, I came from the United States, from California, where I had been teaching for a year and where I had been basically monitoring what was happening in the Bay Area around new consciousness. So I was pretty much aware of all of that. But when I came here, I became immediately captivated by the place, entranced by the place, engaged by the place, but also felt that, it had a gift. It had a gift that ought to be shared with a larger world. My first job here, I think my first job was in maintenance, but I think I was also appointed chair of the what was then called the out-breath community. What basically people dealing with all the dealings we had at that point with the larger world. And in, I think it was in 1975, the year after I arrived, maybe 6 months after I arrived, Tom Welsh, who was my caravan mate, and I were on Iona for a conference that the Iona community put on. That wasn't the Iona community, it was the group that was in Hotel Columbo, I remember that. John Seymour, I think, was the primary presenter. He'd just written a book about sustainability, as I recall. Anyway, it was just, it was just a great event. I mean, my experience of conferences had been in the States. They were largely academic. They were almost invariably boring, very technical, boring events. Whereas this event at the Columbo Hotel was really engaging and interesting. And I said to Tom, we could do stuff like that at Findhorn, And he said, yeah, we could do that. So he and I, he spoke to Peter, I think, first, as I recall. And of course, Peter, as you may recall, had, well, he loved military men primarily. And there were quite a lot of military men here at the time. And of course, they brought that whole dimension of order and timeliness that that Peter was also very fond of. So yeah, Tom and I collaborated on this event for in that happened in October of 1976, called the World Crisis and the Wholeness of Life. And in that case, I was very much captivated by David Spangler. And David Spangler's whole shtick really was about wholeness of life. That, he'd just written a book, Revelation, Birth of a New Age, which basically was about how to achieve wholeness both within and without. And at the same time, I was very much aware of, the usual stuff going on in the world, the sense of collapse. And Tom was very much aware of E.F. Schumacher. And E.F. Schumacher, who had by that time had written Small is Beautiful, had also written another very interesting article called The Party is Over. The party that fossil fuels made possible in terms of significantly enhancing our overall material quality of life was coming to an end because of, I don't know what exactly what was bothering him, but that was a very, very strong piece, and it just struck me as being marvelously complementary to what David Spangler was on about. So in Schumacher's talking about the world crisis, and Spangler's talking about the wholeness of life. So put them together, and we're essentially trying to consider what was happening in the larger world in contrast to what was happening at Findhorn. and there were only four presenters: David Spangler, E.F. Schumacher, William Irwin Thompson, who was a cultural historian and friend of David, and Lady Eve Balfour, who was then head of the Soil Association, the organic soil operation, which has been promoting all things organic for a long time, even longer than Finnhorn's been around. We basically began to look at Findhorn's accomplishments in the garden and their significance in terms of quality of life here in the community, in contrast to what was seemed to be happening out there. Yeah, it was a nice, a way of comparing and contrasting the larger world and the community. And that kind of set the pattern, as far as I could see, for a whole series of conferences. And Peter loved it because it basically it put bums in seats. In October, more or less after the season, the guest season. And he loved it so much that we actually, I think, did a spring conference the following year, both a spring and a fall conference. And, we just picked up on the various kind of themes that were both in some process of birth or evolution in the community with themes that were also unfolding in the larger world. So that's what it was. It was basically bringing people together to compare notes on how our respective efforts were unfolding and maturing, and what and how ways we could mutually support each other. So that was the impulse behind conferences in general terms. As I think you know, I was involved in the organization of 10 of these events over the course of my time here. The first one was the World Crisis and the Wholeness of Life in 76. I don't remember them all, to say the truth. What more do you want to know about them?
Well, how did that dance between the world and the community unfold, and how in particular did it affect the development of the eco-village?
Well, another one of David Spangler's ideas was the whole idea of planetary culture. In other words, as I understood it, whereas we had heretofore largely been circumscribed by our various, our countries, culture was pretty much defined by countries at that point in time because we were still, pretty much cocooned in that regard. So Findhorn was among the first bona fide international community experiments. So he was on about the whole idea of planetary culture emerging, by which I think he meant the sense of the planet as a whole, informing actions that would hopefully be relevant to us, not simply out there, but also here. And that kind of planetary perspective was definitely a part of his work and our awareness here. And I think that was also the glass through which we were perceiving virtually all of these events and themes that we're developing here. So it's a question of being aware of what was going on in the community, but also how it contrasted with and were mirrored by events in the larger whole.
Great. And obviously, there was quite a lot of going back and forth because the
Absolutely.
Community was very au fait with, and the people that were coming were very au fait with what's going on in the world and where evolution may go towards better rather than worse.
So, I mean, I would say that the whole idea of planetary culture was the overarching idea which informed virtually every event. So whether it had to do with, spiritual development, whether it had to do with psychology, economy, nature and conservation, or
Education.
education, or even for that matter, building. And as I think you are aware, I mean, one of the other, well, the next major event that I was a part of was called Building a Planetary Village. And just a bit of context, in 1981, I think it was, I was approached by François Duquesne, who was then, who was first of all Peter's heir, Peter's hand-chosen heir to take on responsibility for the community. And he came to me and said, we think we're done with throwing good money after bad in terms of trying to keep the caravan park up. We need to actually buy the place. Particularly significant in as much as, you know, the foundation was in a deep financial hole at the time. But my job was to prevent, you know, a vision of what a so-called planetary village would look like and what it would do. And that was a very, you know, I was delighted to entertain that possibility, in part because I had spent some time in California and, you know, was aware of a couple of very formative forces there, namely a guy called Sim Vanderin, who had been state architect for Jerry Brown when Jerry Brown was governor of California, had pioneered something called eco-architecture, which was almost entirely rectilinear in quality. And that was in contrast with another guy called James Hubble, who I had met actually in San Diego, in the San Diego area, and who was about as opposite from rectilinear as you could get. I think he was largely inspired by Gaudi's work in Barcelona, and which was very organically inspired, and he loved nature. He used to get his inspirations by going up, climbing an old oak tree on the premises of his property and just basically getting his inspiration while up a tree. But, you know, here we had apples and oranges in terms of different approaches to a new kind of architecture. So we brought them over to do some charrettes around, you know, how we might begin redeveloping the park in accordance with something more harmonious with, or in accordance with nature and in its demands. And I remember the time we were at loggerheads around what to do and where to do it. But having these two old guys, you know, basically just asking us to share our stuff and listening to it all and co-living it all, and, you know, eventually we managed to form a pretty coherent picture of what we wanted to do in Pine Ridge. And it's interesting because we're not talking about the same thing. Here we are 40, 50 years later talking about possibly buying Pine Ridge and developing Pine Ridge. Anyway, at the time, they listened to us all. James agreed to go away, and they would jointly produce a kind of a model, a clay model of what we might actually do with our developments in Pine Ridge. And I don't know how much collaboration went into it, but James did produce this magnificent clay model, which I still have a replica of. I still have it in my garage. A marvelous organic kind of complex, inspired largely by Station House, which was meant to house, I think it was 6 families of 4 each, plus 5 individuals in bedsits. So on the site of what is now the Barrows, there could have been homes for 29 people. But when it came to it, it was definitely a conversation piece. But everybody said, oh, we can't, this is too far out. We can't do that sort of stuff. Including, unfortunately, one of my co-focalizers, John Talbot, who just basically felt it was uneco primarily because it depended upon cement. Mm-hmm. And cement was perceived as being one of the primary offenders in terms of, you know, the early awareness of climate change. Heavy carbon footprint. Anyhow, it was enough to get us started, get us thinking about what we wanted to do with the caravan park. But we also we had the conference. It went very well. It launched the idea, and then the following year, there was a concerted manifestation effort led largely by Jeremy Slocum in association with Eileen Caddy, who personally signed 10,000 letters inviting our global network to contribute, which they did. That global network contributed, I think it was, to two-thirds of the money that we required to buy the caravan park. And we did so on the promise that if you would give us this money, we would not only buy the caravan park, but over years we would redevelop it from a caravan park into a planetary village. And this whole idea of a planetary village, once again, a David Spangler idea. Mm-hmm. You know, a place that lived its life locally in relation to and in response to our sense of what the planet was asking of all of us. And the concept was eventually shortened from planetary village to eco-village, largely by John Talbot. It's largely because I think it was a simpler idea, and it definitely worked.